For the fans, by the fans, this is the Non-League Football Show, and I'm Tim Fuel, back with a weekly look at the world of non-league. Easter is nearly upon us, and so too, almost, is the end of the season. We speak with a player manager who effectively has five, possibly six, cup finals between now and the end of the season, hoping to secure promotion, a title, and a County Cup too. Jamie Coyle is no stranger to the manager's role, nor to combining it with playing too. And since taking on both mantles at Ramsgate in February, he's tweaked the side to sit top of the Isthmian South East with four league games remaining, all against opposition with at least playoff aspirations themselves. It's been a busy week in non-league with plenty of admin and debate. Editor-at-large at the non-league paper, Matt Badcock, helps sift through it all and provides a roundup of what we can expect to read in this weekend's Easter edition. Plenty to come then. Sit back, relax, and let's get matters underway. Much debate then about fixture congestion, and we'll touch again on that later too with the non-league show roundup. But my next guess is it's got four massive games in the league to play, plus a County Cup semi-final. In fact, so big are those league games, I'd go as far as saying all five remaining games in the next 2 weeks are cup finals, and that's without including an actual cup final that they might actually get to if they win that semi-final. He only took on the player manager's role in February, but since then he's helped edge his club nearer the title, and they currently sit top of the Isthmian South Division, South East Division at step four. They're level on points with second place, but they do have a three-goal advantage should goal difference play a hand. So let's welcome to the Non-League Football Show to player manager at Ramsgate FC, Mr. Jamie Coyle. Welcome, Jamie.
Thank you. Great to be on.
It's good to get you on, Jamie. Now, I mentioned there, five cup finals. On Saturday, league action at home to the fifth-placed side currently, Beckenham Town. Then a massive Easter Monday away day at second-place Chatham Town. Saturday week, you are at home to Whitehawk. They're currently, third. Then the Kent Cup semi-final on Tuesday 18th before the league season ends on Saturday the 22nd, hopefully, with a trip to Ashford United, who themselves, they're going to be eyeing up a playoff spot because they're currently sixth. You and Chatham are 6 points clear of third, so I guess the title is probably between you. But, I mean, people talk about a tough run-in. Do they come tougher than yours?
No, I think we looked at the fixture list when they came out in just at the end of pre-season, and I think we knew as players it was going to be a bend to the set. But, I spoke to the press earlier in the week. You look at the stats throughout the season, we've actually got a real good points return to them cup final games as such. We beat Chatham at home, we beat Ashford at home, we had a good result and performance at Whitehawk as well. So, you know, them kind of cup final games that we've had previously have ended with real good performances as well as results. So, you know, I think that the players are relishing the end of the season. You know, like you say, on paper, it's a real, real tough finish for us, but you know, if you're drawing or you're winning games, you know, in and around you, it stops other teams catching up and gaining some momentum on you as well. So, you know, we're in a great position. You know, at the start of the season or when I took over and we were third in the league, if we said that going into the last four games we'd be top of the league, we would have taken it. So, you know, we're in a great position, and it'll be an exciting end to what will happen.
Indeed, it will be. That Easter Monday trip, it's not going to decide it all, I guess. So, do you then try and play that down with the players? They know how big that game is, don't they?
Yeah, of course. I mean, every single game now, the next four games, there's so much riding on it, and we're going to need some real top performances from individuals as well as a team for us to get some positive results from any of the four games, really, because, as you said before, everyone's playing for something. You know, Ashford are fighting for their lives to potentially get the last playoff place. You know, Whitehawk want to try and finish as high as they possibly can to potentially get a home draw in the playoffs if they don't make the championship. So, you know, there's loads on the line for everyone. But as I said before, I think we've tended to struggle against the sides that are down the bottom, that you don't get massive gates, and you know, trying to get yourself up for them games is proved a little bit more difficult throughout the season. But you know, when the top sides come along, as I said before, we've had some real good performances, not only from individuals but from the team. So, you know, I'm hoping for, and as the players are, hoping for a real good end to the season. It's going to be exciting, as I said. But it's a great opportunity that we've got now to finish positively and try and achieve something at the end of the season.
Yeah, it's far better to be involved in these sort of games than just having a couple of rubber games to play come the end of the season. And you've been at the club nearly two seasons now, first as a player and then player manager since Steve Lovell departed in February. So you've seen, I guess, all sides of the club. Is the club ready for promotion?
100%, yeah, 100%. I mean, I went down there for the Fennec Cup at the end, or the start of last season and pre-season. I took the game because Jay Saunders was on holiday when we was at Margate together, and just to see the infrastructure, the new pitch, the fan base. They've got a new kind of viewing gallery that's just beside the pitch, the terraces. It was complete transformation from when I went there as a player, because you used to look at the fixture list and think, you know, it's the one game that you just really didn't look forward to. It was always windy. The pitch was uneven. It was a real tough place to go. And you know, it was completely been transformed when I went that day with Margate. And, you know, since then, obviously, the opportunity came to sign as a player with Matt Longhurst, which I really enjoyed. And, you know, it's happened this season that I've had the opportunity. The chairman's asked me to take the manager's job. And the players have been brilliant. You know, we're 12 games unbeaten since I've taken the job. That's testament to the players that they've really brought into what me and Nicky have tried to do and just tweak a few things here and there. And, you know, responded brilliantly. So he's given everyone at the club a real opportunity for us to now, you know, push on for the last four games, and including the game against Margate in the semi-finals, and, you know, have a real good end to the season and hopefully have a couple of cups at the end of it as well, which would be brilliant.
A couple of cups, maybe a couple of jars as well. I mean, even at 39, you've got plenty of managerial experience in your time at Welling, Dartford. You mentioned assistant to Jay Saunders at Margate. But this must have been almost an odd gig to take over when you say you're third in the table, just 2 points behind, 15 games to go. Is it, I guess, because you're a player, because you're already involved in that, did that make it, you know, everybody was already on your side? It was easy to just move the snowball forward.
It was. And I think the last season when Matt got sacked, the chairman asked me to take the job and I turned it down, and a few of the players found out about that and weren't pleased, and they said, like, they was expecting me to take the job and they would like me to take the job, but I didn't feel it was right. I know Matt really well when he brought me into the club, and then I didn't want to jump in his grave basically when he left. So I carried on playing, and you know, the same opportunity happened this season, and you know, I felt that potentially I could add a little bit of my spin on things and just create a little bit more, changes in formation and the way that we played slightly. And it wasn't massive wholesale changes that were needed. It was third in the league, as you said. So it was only some tweaks here and there that I felt that I could potentially add.
I mean, you've almost undersold it there, because you seem to settle in immediately into the role. I think, didn't you even score in that first game you were in charge against Littlehampton? Being a player manager, though, how does that balance work in modern day football? Because I guess in the early 80s we saw the first sort of player managers at a higher level, and then it sort of disappeared again, and there aren't many player managers out there.
Well, in my lifetime I can't remember there being a successful one, and I totally understand why, because it's near enough an impossible job. It really is, you know. And I've done it at Welling in the National South, and you know, we had a successful season, but it was very, very difficult. It really is, because, you know, at the time I had Hugo Langton and Tristan Lewis working with me, and they will see the game completely different from the side than what I'm seeing on the pitch. And, you know, there's only a certain amount of, you know, correspondence you can have between yourself and the sideline when changes are made with substitutions or shape formations and so on and so forth. Really, really difficult. It really is. And you know, I think I've said all along that this is going to be my last season, and then I can really focus going back into the managing and the coaching, like I've really enjoyed in the last 7 or 8 years, really. But yeah, it's a real tough job. But you know, the good thing is, as you said earlier, you know, the players know what I'm about. I try and bring a real professionalism and organisation to what we do, whether it's the tactics, the organisation, the looking at the reports of other sides and how they play. So we try and really drilled down on the detail, and as I said, the players have been outstanding for us. We can't ask for it for any more, and we just need a little bit of the rub of the green between now and the end of the season, and hopefully that'll be enough to get us over the line.
Yeah, I get how that, you know, being a player manager can be difficult. Certainly, sort of pattern of play and sort of there's certain things that you won't see if you're playing a game because you're so focused on that. But I mentioned your managerial experience, but also coaching's your bag, isn't it? FA tutor, UEFA license, all your experience there. I'm guessing for you, developing players is a key aspect of why you're still involved. And perhaps as a player manager, that's a little bit easier than being a dugout manager, maybe 50 yards away from the action.
Yeah, it is. It really is. And you know, that's especially when I speak to some of our younger players that, you know, you've got like the Ben Fitchett that's been outstanding this season. We've really missed him. You know, he's been out for 6 to 8 weeks, but he was the kind of centre half partner for myself for the majority of the season, when we had, you know, we had one of the best defensive records in the league. But, you know, just working and playing with someone like that, I'm hoping that it's going to have a positive influence on him in terms of, you know, just picking up, whether it's positional things, just whether it's organisation, you know, communication, that, you know, when I'm not out there next season, players like that I've played with, I'm hoping they're going to kind of step up and be my eyes and my ears and hopefully, you know, do the organisation that I've been doing this season when I'm on the pitch. And that's your job as a coach and a manager, isn't it? You know, it's trying to get that, you know, all the pitches, all the experience that I've had from the 22 seasons of me playing. I've now got my job is to get that out and on the coaching pitch to the players that are playing, not only at centre half, but across the whole field, really. And like I say, if you do that well, then you'll be a successful coach and a manager.
Yeah, and this South East division in the Ismail League that you're in at the moment, it pits your wits against a lot of other clubs in the Kent area. You also cover Sussex further afield into London. But I'm guessing that means that not only do you know a lot of people that are involved on the other side, but so do the players all know one another as well. Is that an extra challenge when you're trying to plot wins?
Potentially. I mean, I think the hardest thing, you know, we played against Chichester on Tuesday night, and again, their coach is an FA tutor that I know really well, and, you know, he was at Bognor Regis, and, you know, you're playing against these kind of sides that you don't really know so much about the players, and they rotate things around, and they get a lot of youngsters from Brighton's academy, and, you know, they're playing for, you know, Tuesday night, they're not really playing for anything. They can't really get in the playoffs now. They can't go down. So they have their real kind of freedom. And they were brilliant against us. They're one of the better teams that we've played this season, I thought. So, when you go down to the Surrey sides, the Sussex sides, it is quite difficult to, you know, we get match reports and there's usually 5 or 6 changes to personnel after you work on it on a Thursday night. There's then changes. Whereas being in the National League, it doesn't happen so much that way. So it is tough. And like you say, a lot of the players do know each other. A lot of them have been around the block. You know, we've got a lot of guys that have played for East Grinstead with Matt Longhurst or played for Asher with Tommy. So, you know, the managers know them as well. So it is difficult at times. But it's really just concentrating on what we can do between now and the end of the season, and hopefully that will be enough to finish off the season in a positive way.
And hopefully, yeah, promotion all being well, I guess that means the Isthmian Premier and probably some much bigger journeys. You know, you mentioned Chichester City. That's probably, I guess, your furthest afield that you have to go this season. Big journeys, Hertfordshire, Essex, London, Surrey. Would that mean a shift in the playing squads and just considering that travelling and availability of players as well for midweek?
I think the biggest thing, Tim, is looking at your training venue for us. And it was the same when I was at Margate. You know, if you train at Ramsgate or at Margate, your player recruiting is so difficult because, you know, you're kind of closing the door for the boys that we know in Essex or in the depths of London. So, you know, that's one thing I said to the chairman when I took the job, is that we need to find a little bit more of a central location to train. So it's not too bad, you know, if we're going to sign players from Essex or from London or, you know, the other side of Kent, that, you know, the travelling is a lot easier and it's a lot easier to then recruit and attract players. So, you know, we actually train in Gillingham instead of Ramsgate, and it's been really beneficial in me attracting players like Toa Feek from Welling, that's come in and has been outstanding. You know, them kind of players wouldn't have liked to have travelled away to Ramsgate two nights a week and then had a game. It was just too far. So for us, it's really about when we're looking at recruiting players, you know, recognising that it's going to be really difficult for them to travel all the way down to Ramsgate and trying to get a little bit more local so it's easier for everyone, really, a little bit more central, even for the ones that do live Ramsgate or Dover way.
Yeah, and in reality, though, you've got, what, 2 hours of training tonight on Thursday evening, maybe an hour or so either side of those games, Saturday and Monday, I guess various WhatsApp groups. But however good a coach, manager, mate you can be to these guys, it puts a lot on the players to look after themselves, be honest with themselves and you at this time of the season when mental well-being and physical well-being plays a big impact on what you can get out of them.
Yeah, and I had a conversation this week with someone at work at the FA, and I think what I've recognised in the 22 years of me playing is the professionalism, the levels of professionalism now in non-league football at step four, it is far, far superior than it's ever been before. You know, whether it's the tactics, the analysis, the dietary side, it's the players that we've especially got at Ramsgate, they're so professional. You know, they're constantly in the gym. They're putting on, you know, times of certain runs that they're doing. And, you know, and they kind of manage themselves. And that's why I was, you know, this season when I got asked to take the job, I was confident that we could be successful because I know the players inside out and I know how much they want, you know, success for themselves as well as the club, you know. So, that side was never a concern for me. You know, there are a lot of the boys that we've got want to go back into the National League or want to go there for the first time because they've not played at that level yet. And they've got the potential to do that.
Jamie, I could talk to you forever because there's so much that you've got knowledge from a player, managerial, coaching, and just you're probably an encyclopedia of football, and people need to tap into you more. But you've got your own focus this weekend. As I say, we're speaking Thursday afternoon. You've got training this evening. Does that mean you get Good Friday off?
My dog's just had six pups, so I'm currently hard feeding for the next 9 weeks. So, no, we're gonna go and watch VCD tomorrow against Ashford. So we've got that tomorrow. So it's an opportunity to see Ashford before we play them. We'll get them watched one more time before, you know, we play them on the last game of the season. So, no, we're busy tomorrow afternoon watching that game, and then obviously roll into Saturday and Monday. So it's going to be an exciting weekend.
It is an exciting weekend. It's always exciting to talk to you, Jamie. I wish you luck with these, five, six games remaining. Hopefully we'll be speaking to you again very soon, celebrating success. Thanks for joining us on the Non-League Football Show.
Thanks, Tim. Take care. Thank you very much.
Time then to head on over to Non-League Paper Towns. And welcome back to the Non-League Football Show. Editor-at-large at the Non-League Paper, Mr. Matt Bancock. Welcome back, Matt.
Hi, Tim. How are you?
Well, it's busy, isn't it? The new one? I was going to put that in the script, but I couldn't spell it. So I guess we should start this week with the National League. News that put football into perspective this week with the sudden death of Notts County CEO Jason Turner at the age of just 50. He was a fount of knowledge and contacts in football, and he'd been at Notts since March 2016, but known in football from his time at many clubs, including where I first met him, Bath City, where he was a club secretary during the 1990s.
Yeah, very sad news, and obviously very shocking for everyone at Notts County. I was on the press conference call early in the week with Luke Williams and Macaulay Langstaff, and kind of listening to both of them talk about him and pay tribute to him, and kind of the impact that he clearly had on everybody at Notts. And I think Luke Williams kind of said, you know, if you had a problem, then he was the one to go to, and he'd sort it out. Macaulay Langstaff kind of said the same thing. And I think probably we don't always, you know, take into account, you know, from the outside, we think about the manager being a figurehead for the club and all that kind of thing. But, you know, how important a CEO is and what they do and the hours they put in and how they sort of drive a club forward. And obviously, you know, it's been difficult times when he's been there at Notts and he's got them through that. And, you know, you can see the clear impact that he's had on so many people. And I think they sound, you know, it's kind of difficult when there's a tragedy like that and something so sudden, but you know, trying to kind of use it as a, you know, try and turn it into positive, because they sort of know that you wouldn't want them to be sort of feeling sorry for themselves and feeling down. It'd be wanting them to keep going and trying to do all they can to get promotion, and that's kind of how they're looking at it.
Yeah, the club, I think they're going to be celebrating his life, or the things that he did for the club during their home match on Good Friday against Wealdstone, and Luke Williams also, you know, as you said there, although everybody's deeply saddened at John's death, they're going to be doing all they can to continue the good work he plays such a big hand in, you know, challenging for the title this season. And then, of course, Easter Monday, we see that long-awaited Wrexham-Notts County game. Wrexham top again after Notts didn't play last week. They're 3 points clear in a game in hand. They've hit the 100 goal mark and the 100 point target, with six then still to play. Going into this two game Easter weekend, defeat to Notts though for Wrexham, and it all becomes level again, and I guess the Wrexham nerves are going to be jangling then.
It's just a huge weekend. You say they've got the games, Good Friday, Wrexham are off to FC Halifax, Notts have got Wealdstone at home, and you know, will it be still the 3 points come the end of them, you know, Monday when they rock up to play each other in this game that's kind of been, feels like it's been on the horizon, been talked about for a couple of months now. It's
like one of those pay-per-view boxing matches, isn't it? It's lots of trials.
Yeah, it feels like, and it kind of, you know, a couple of months ago you say, well, that'll be a big one, but you sort of don't really know where the league, what the position would be. But the fact is, it's at this stage of the season, this, you know, depending on what happens in the games before then, will they be level? Will it be 3 points? Will it be anything different to that? It's going to be a fascinating game. There's lots of sort of talk. Is it the biggest game in non-league history? It's kind of one of those hard to say, but it's certainly the biggest one in, you know, again, for everything that's on it and the levels that the two have hit. I mean, you know, as you say, both over 100 goals. Notts are on 97 points as we speak now. Wrexham on 100. I think over the last five seasons, that would have been enough of promotion for both. Yeah, and I think you have to go back to Lincoln and I think, I can't remember exactly what it is now off the top of my head, but you know, Notts aren't all that far off that anyway. So it's looking at record breaking seasons, and as we know, only one of them is guaranteed to go up. I know there's lots of arguments for three up, and that's why I'm sort of in favour of that as well. You know, it seems to be that we sort of come pushing that way, and when you look at the size of these clubs and the bottleneck and how hard this league is to get out of, you know, two up automatically and then one through the playoffs, it's kind of been the hope for a while, and it feels like it's possibly getting ever closer. But I think if it was three up this season, then this game kind of wouldn't have as much on it. It would just be a title game because they'd both be promoted by now. Yeah. On we'd go, and the sort of the interest and the profile and the fact that this game's on Easter Monday on TV, on BT Sport, I think it'd be getting people wider than sort of non-league would be sort of interested in watching what's going to be a titanic battle. But, you know, the other thing as well is, and Adam Virgo makes this point in his column in Sunday's paper, they've both only lost two games this season.
You look at the top of the table, we talk about fine margins. Managers always tell us about fine margins. Wrexham played 40, won 31, drawn 7, lost 2, 4, 105 against 36. Notts County, they've played one more game, 41. They've won 29 games, so two short of Wrexham. They've drawn 10. That's the big difference, isn't it? There's three games where they've drawn that might have been, you know, a late goal. It might have been just so much different. Almost goals scored 103 to 105 for Wrexham. Goals against both of them, 36. It's so tight. And it is such small margins. For one of them to lose out at the end, if Hollywood don't pick this up, I mean, you know, this story of this league needs to be a whole documentary. This season.
Yeah, I was thinking about that. I sort of see about the the sort of Netflix cameras going doing all sorts of different sports. Yeah, and one of the National League is brilliant the way it's been this season. I mean, yeah, fine margins, and you know, whoever doesn't win the league is going to obviously be the favourites for the playoffs. And everybody knows that the playoffs aren't as straightforward as that. And you know, what will happen? That's going to be the next sort of exciting part of it. And Luke Williams has kind of been talking recently. He sort of saying Wrexham are in the box seat. They are really, aren't they? So he's talking about, you know, no kind of victim mentality, that, you know, there's nothing they can do about the fact that they've had this unbelievable season. If Wrexham beat them, then, you know, they can't sit around feeling sorry for themselves for any period of time, because it'll be straight into the playoffs and they've got to try and go that way. And it'll be the same for Wrexham if it flips the other way. You know, they can't dwell on the fact. And, you know, this is one of the things that's always kind of been hanging over Wrexham is that season that they got 98 points behind Fleetwood. You know, again, most other years they would have got up, you know, sort of something like Crawley's and Cheltenham's have sort of topped 100 points. I think they got 99, but you know, most years that would have been enough to get them up, and they go into the playoffs and losing the semi-finals. It's kind of always been hanging around, and if they're going to get up, they wouldn't have to get that many points if they did do it. But obviously, this season's proven that they need even more than that, because it's the levels they've hit is just incredible. And I think if you think about it, through a whole season, over across the amount, you know, the amount of games they've played so far, they've only lost two. You know, this isn't FIFA on the PlayStation where you can you just win every game. This is, you know, proper, you know, hard level of sport, and to have found ways to win so many games or get points when they maybe were up against it, or to blow teams away as consistently as they have is remarkable, really.
Yeah, and you know, budgets aside, and you know, resources and all that sort of thing, it doesn't matter. You know, you can have the flashiest car in the street. You just also need to be able to drive it, and that's the big thing, isn't it? Is these two managers in charge at these two clubs, and the staff that they've built around them, and the staff off the field as well. It's they're machines that have perfected themselves over recent seasons, and particularly this season. And I think the two of them are bouncing off each other as clubs as well.
Yeah, I think Macaulay Langsar said a few weeks ago, to the game against Southend and Arsenal, he was saying he was grateful Wrexham were in the league, because he doesn't feel that they would be at these levels, either of them, if it wasn't for each other. And there is that kind of feeling between the two that they've pushed each other along. And you know, there's also feels like quite a bit of respect between the two because of the levels they've hit. This isn't sort of like a bitter battle or anything like that. You know, there's quite a bit of respect there between them because of the size of the clubs. You know, two huge, huge clubs. Yes, the resources are obvious, and that's obviously does, you know, come into the positions they're in. But again, we've seen, you know, on different levels, but you know, you see it throughout different leagues as well. Resource doesn't always doesn't guarantee success, and also you've got to think of the pressure that both teams are under. You know, Wrexham with the sort of spotlight and the, you know, everything that's on, and kind of all the noise around the club's kind of crazy. It's nothing like we've ever really, really seen. You know, you think about Salford and things like that, and that sort of, you know, with their owners and the scrutiny that brought. This is kind of on a different level. You know, some of these players have got their faces on billboards in America and things. It's kind of, it's madness, really. But they've had to put a lot of that aside and all that noise and turn up for training every day and work hard and get it right, because, you know, everyone wants to beat both these sides. And that's why, again, the levels are so impressive, because they've managed to kind of, you know, navigate through that and put in the performances that they have.
Yeah, and as you say, one of them's going to have to go through the playoffs, and that's not going to be easy. Although there's, you know, they're significantly, you know, ahead of the others in the chasing pack. It all still comes down to one-off games, and just below them, there is that gap developing. And then below that, there seems to be a gap for those that are going to be in the playoffs as well. I guess between the Southend in ninth and the eight above, I wouldn't want to write off Southend, Willstone, Solihull, Dagenham and Redbridge. But with just six to go, there's a 9-10 points difference from that top seven. So maybe that's a bit too big for those clubs to join whatever clubs appear in the playoffs that come the end of the season.
Yeah, and that's why this weekend is this doubleheader over Good Friday, Easter Monday, so massive in this division. It's a bit like in the Masters Golf and golf, you know, the moving weekend. This is it. This is the time now. You know, if it's going to happen, you know, it's going to be back-to-back wins over this weekend and results go your way to force you in. And that'll be so fascinating to see come the end of Monday's games. Where is the table? What are we looking at with the final four games to go? You know, so you say Southend just falling off it the last sort of couple of weeks. The sort of gap's gone to 8 points. But, you know, anything, two wins over the weekend, easily don't win, kind of that changes it around. Bromley are there again and got that experience. Bournemouth have kind of shot up into there with almost sort of unnoticed in a strange way. Got best defensive record in the league as well, you know. 33 goals they've conceded, fewer than Wrexham and Notts, but only scored 48. Like Eastleigh as well, they only scored 48. So it's there's so many different ways of getting in there, but this is gonna be the big weekend, and it'll be it's just going to be fascinating to see what it does look like, what the table looks like when we get to those final whistles on Monday.
Yeah, indeed. And it's the same at the bottom as well, because we saw Mason United confirmed as relegated this week. But the bottom four, again, there's becoming a little bit detached now. I guess all those involved with Scunthorpe, Torquay and Yeovil won't have given up hope just yet. But again, come Monday, that table could tell a very telling story.
Yeah, it's huge, and there's some huge games tomorrow. You know, you've got Aldershot and Yeovil up against each other tomorrow, and that's 20th and 21st, either side of the relegation line. Gateshead against Scunthorpe. You know, Gateshead had a huge win in midweek against Yeovil. They've been picked up recently. Gateshead flying, because you got through to the FA Trophy final, beat Yeovil 4-0 Tuesday night. And they now take on Scunthorpe, who need absolutely everything to kind of go for them. And, you know, you're thinking at how many games you need to win out of those final six. Well, Scunthorpe have got five more to go. You know, do they need to win? I don't know, they were sort of 7 points off it now. Probably need to win four or five. They only won 8 games all season. So that sort of shows, you know, you're asking a team to go and win, you know, half, if not more, the amount of games they've already won this season, which is, you know, not easy. But as we all know, in football, it's the hope. It's the hope that kills you. That's what we keep coming back, because they'll, you know, they'll be hoping that they can sort of get out of it somehow and avoid that drop into the National League North. Torquay again. Got Eastleigh tomorrow. Huge game on Good Friday. Eastleigh, as we just said a minute ago, pushing for that playoffs and to get in there, and Torquay fighting for their lives, 6 points off it. They absolutely need to win tomorrow as well.
Those Monday games as well. I'm looking down there. Yeovil Dorking again. That could close that gap sufficiently. It's just every week we say it's the most exciting league in the world, and it certainly is. And news this week as well that final set of National League games on Saturday the 29th of April is going to kick off at 5:30 p.m. It's become a bit of a tradition, probably a bit of a headache at non-league paper towers on a Saturday evening. But I guess, as we were expecting, and we also had a confirmation as well that the playoffs across the National League are going to include extra time and penalties should the same be required. So, I mean, this season could keep going on and on and on.
It feels like it could do, yeah. I would must admit, selfishly, would have preferred the half 12 kick. I remember they had a few years ago when BT Sport had that slot. The half 12 on a Saturday is much more convenient from a very selfish non-league paper point of view. But yeah, I think that's what, you know, one of the things with BT Sport, they do give it great coverage and profile, and unfortunately you have to move them kickoffs around and things. So I know it's sort of frustrating for some people, but and fans, when especially when they've book tickets in and things like that, train tickets and travel. But it is kind of unfortunately one of the, with the TV deals and things, it has to be done. Sort of good news from that sort of front as well. BT Sports showing the National League North and South promotion finals as well, aren't they? And she's again great for the profile of this level of football and non-league to be putting those games out. But yeah, it feels like this season could go on. We're so close to the end. There's just so much football to be played. It's great.
There is, and we've spoken about those playoffs. That National League playoff final we learned this week is going to be up at Wembley again this year. It's Saturday the 13th of May. That's when really the sort of season does sort of come to a close in football terms. 3 o'clock kickoff, and they've got these early bird tickets available. I think £20 for adults, £10 for seniors, £5 for under 16s. I think if you pay a full price ticket, you get one under 16 free. So, I mean, talk about having to choose who your favourite child is. You've got to decide whether you're paying a fiver for one or getting them in for free for the other one. And there was some confusion, I think, when that was first announced as to how this might affect ticket prices for the clubs who eventually be confirmed as being in the final. But the league have stated that those early bird tickets, if you buy them now, they'll be initially purchased for the neutral zone. But if that person's team progresses to the final, those tickets can then be transferred into the designated club zones. So the idea is to encourage fans of all clubs to buy those tickets now.
Yeah, it's a tricky one, isn't it? I think if you're a fan sort of on those just outside the playoffs, personally, my sort of superstitions wouldn't allow me to, as a fan of a team who could potentially be going through a playoffs elsewhere in the EFL this year, I can't even bring myself to look at when the playoff final date is, because I didn't think it was going to be a thing a few weeks ago, and now it might be on again. So it's yeah, that's just my sort of slightly weird approach to football, I think. But yeah, so I mean, it's a great, if you're a neutral and you think, you know, you fancy going on watching a game. I mean,
ironically, it's probably cheaper than going to watch a National League game this season. You can go and watch
cheaper than your normal game. Yeah, but I mean, it could be, again, we don't know who's going to get there, but that could be a mega, you know, if it's Notts County Chesterfield, it could be a huge attendance. And, you know, Woking would take a load as well. It could be the game to be. And I just think everyone's just fascinating those games. I thought it's quite nice having that neutral hat on sometimes and just being able to go and enjoy watching a game and not have that sort of stress and that sort of sick feeling in your stomach watching your team in a playoff final, just trying to win, however it comes about. You know, I think we all know the playoffs are definitely the way to go up if you could pick it before, but when it's actually happening, not all that much fun from personal experience.
Yeah, not great for the blood pressure, I guess. I mean, also at Wembley as well, particularly for neutrals is a big thing. The following weekend will be non-league finals day, of course. It's Sunday the 21st of May. Two games for one entry prize, FA Vars final, obviously, between Newport Pagnell Town and Ascot United. FA Trophy final, FC Halifax Town and Gateshead made their way there last week. Tickets for that day go on sale via the Wembley box office, I believe, at noon next Wednesday the 12th of April. So, yeah, it is that time of year where admin becomes a massive thing in any football fan's life.
Got to get on the get on those websites and get booked in and book your hotels up and all that. You know, again, it's gonna be a fascinating, fantastic weekend to look forward to. Sort of one of those. It feels like saying earlier, there's a lot of football still to be played before then, but it will soon be around. And I think from our point of view, we're just hoping it's not as cold as that Concord Rangers Harrogate final that day a few years ago. When you forgot your coat, Tim.
I'm just thawing out now, I think.
I had to go out between the two games to get a second coat, Alex. I had two coats on by the end. It's absolutely freezing, isn't it? And just rubbish because it was in front of an empty Wembley, wasn't it? So behind closed doors that one, wasn't it? So.
Yeah, and it was ironic that was the one time that I was in that part of the stand that gets wet when it rains as well. It's sort of, yeah.
Yeah, that was the first time I've been on the left-hand side as well. It felt like completely, I felt like in a different stadium. I didn't, in that sort of left-hand side of the press, was in the left, to the left of the dugout as well. And the right felt a bit strange. I just remember how cold it was and just not a lot of fun. But I was sort of like slightly laughing at you. That's not having a coat at all, so.
I bet that was in my younger years. I don't worry. Yeah. It's been noted this season that I do put my coat on before half time, whatever game I go to. But yeah, it's a great game to get to as a fan, non-league final state. And yeah, I'm sure we'll be there giving it coverage as well. The big debate this week on social media, though, has been this the fixture backlog. We've still got sides with so many games to play that the National League system has to conclude all league fixtures. Certainly those involving any promotion or relegation issues, there might be some other dispensation if it's sort of like a dead rubber type game. But anything involving promotion or relegation issues, they have to be played by Saturday the 22nd of April to allow for the playoffs and then their conclusion so that the Leeds committee can meet on the, I believe, the 8th of May to finalise the look of the next year's pyramid as far as possible before all the AGM season begins. But across the pyramid, there's lots of clubs facing 3-4 games a week, maybe more than that. But the combined counties league looks especially congested in those final 2 weeks. I know Sandhurst in Division 1 of the combined counties have got 14 matches still to play. They're in the promotion hunt, so still have to finish all those games by the 22nd of April. They're 12 points off top spot. But they've got 7 games in hand, so you can see why they want to play those games and they want to search for that title. On Tuesday night, they did lose a game at home to Bagshot, who were unable to field a team. So that game might not need to be played and might be handled as a walkover to Sandhurst. But still a big ask of all involved at the club, you know, both in terms of players, staff and fans. And looking at that table as well, Brookhouse in the same division facing a similar backlog, and they've got a battle against relegation too. It's tough times for certain clubs this season just to get to that end of the season.
Yeah, as you say, a lot of games to play in such a short space of time, and it feels to me the season, I sort of understand some of the reasons for it. I know, like I say, there's lots of things to sort out in the summers and then also a lot to do, and you know, a lot of leagues run by volunteers and things, they need some sort of time as well, but I feel like the season just finished earlier. And I don't know. I always feel like the season finishes in May.
Yep.
That's what I always remember when, you know, my 16th birthday, I remember going to watch Farmer Town win the league against, win the Ryman League against Billericay. That was on the 28th of April. And there's still another week of football after that. And just as it sort of gets warmer and nice and you feel like you want to get out and watch a game, football, the seasons have sort of finished. But again, I do understand that, you know, there's lots of different, that's just a very personal opinion, there's lots of different factors and things that go on and, you know, sort of all the, obviously clubs and wages and all that kind of stuff. So, but it does feel like it's finishing earlier and earlier, trying to squeeze everything in as, you know, just to get everything done and dusted. And, you know, it's a bit like that with the playoffs as well. They come and go so quickly as well. It's a bit of a whirlwind. You can get in the playoffs and in the last minute on a Saturday, and you can be out of it by Tuesday. Your season can be over. So
every year we find ourselves reporting on a player that, or a manager that's had to cancel their family holiday because they didn't expect to be in the playoffs.
Yeah. Well, it's a good approach really to make sure you get in the playoffs. I think to book a holiday. You know, and trophy finals and things and weddings, you know, but weddings, I remember 3 years ago when last time actually Halifax got to the final and Kingsley James had his wedding on the day before the trophy final. So it's a good way of sort of ensuring that you have something to play for at the end of the season. Just book a really expensive holiday or wedding and then have the headache of trying to work out how you get around it.
Yeah, I mean, there is headaches, and as you say, there are so many factors involved in, you know, rescheduling these games, planning them. You know, these dates have been planned for months in advance. You know, most of these leagues announce these dates before the season starts. You know, my own club, we've got 5 games in 8 days, league home on Saturday, league home on Tuesday, County Cup final on the Wednesday evening, then 2 long away trips to Tiverton the very next day on the Thursday, another extended M4 journey to Merthyr Town on the final day of the season. The county FA aren't able to reschedule their cup final on the Wednesday due to availability. As you say, you know, run by volunteers, we rely on all these people, we don't want to take too much from. The league has to be finished by that Saturday, I've already said, because of the league allocations. It's not good for player welfare, it's not good for club staff or fans, and it is a mess. And I'm not quite sure what the solution is, but I do hope that, you know, maybe some of the committees somewhere look at the relook at the proposal that Simon Asprey, a Hayes United fan, suggested nearer the start of the season in a letter that was published in the non-league paper back then, that County Cups become a pre-season mini tournament. It becomes local, it's competitive. They're normally the same sides that are going to be playing anyway in pre-season friendlies. That could ease this fixture backlog that we get in the second part of the season.
Yeah, there's lots of different things that probably could be looked at, isn't there? And yeah, maybe it does need kind of a big.
When do we have time to look at anything? Because there's too much.
Well, that's the thing. Yeah, but yeah, I think the sort of serious side of it is sort of player welfare, and does it sort of reduce the quality of the games? But yes, that sort of injury side of it, and the overload that it is, you know, that does give players, and how good is that? For the bigger picture of the game, but it's a difficult one because, you know, for everyone who thinks one thing, there'll be another view, won't there, as well. So it sort of reminds you, go back to the COVID sort of days when there was no football, when, you know, everyone had a different opinion about what should happen, what shouldn't happen, and it's kind of the same on these sort of subjects as well. So yeah.
It's always one of those things.
County's obviously proud of their cups, aren't they? And they want them to be sort of season, you know, climax of season or their own season and things. And obviously, it comes down, they want to have like the finals at the sort of big grounds. And can you sort of, when you can get the availability of those as well, I guess that comes into it. But, you know, it would be nice to have sort of some sort of competitive football in pre-season as well. I'm not a huge fan of pre-season games, sort of kind of endure them if you kind of have to, just to get out of the house and get a bit of sun, hopefully, in July. But it would put sort of different thing on it if there was a bit more competitive action. But then again, you know, some people, clubs will be wanting to sort of rotate through different players and things like that, and squads, and not easy.
It's not easy, and that's probably why. It's been a busy week, really. Of course, talking of busy weeks, though, we're talking about the season nearly being over. But you'd think that the managerial merry-go-round might have switched itself off, but it's apparently still plugged in. Because last weekend we saw Tommy Widdrington resign at second place King's Lynn in the National North, and then at the start of the week take up the managerial post at Aldershot Town. That created. Yeah, plenty of discussion. Shots, Ross McNeely had previously been given the job until the end of the season, but he's now going to step back into his role in the academy. And meanwhile, at King's Lynn Town, I understand Chairman Stephen Cleaves alleging an illegal approach being made to by the Shots. But he's placed former assistant at King's Lynn, Mark Hughes, in interim charge, and he's going to be assisted by old friend of the show, Hugo Langton, and goalkeeper Paul Jones. These are the sort of stories that we'd expect to be talking about maybe the start of the season, not the very end.
No, well, it was one of those when news came through into the office last Saturday that Tommy Wilson left King's Lynn. You think, what? What's going on there? And then very quickly it became apparent from several different sources that that Aldershot was the name on a lot of lips. And then it sort of, as it proved the next day, and as you say, King's Lynn not particularly happy with how it's gone down. I think there's sort of possibly been some contact early in the season between the two anyway, over Tommy Richardson. But, you know, he's made the decision, sort of been made to walk away and then he go to Aldershot. And, you know, King's Lynn in this sort of position where they've been going up there all year and had a great FA Cup win against Doncaster as well, didn't they? It's, you know, great season for them. Now it's also about, while sort of the legal sort of side of it will be sort of going on in the background, I guess from their point of view, they're going to just have to try and put that out of their minds as quickly as possible and just try and get promoted likely through the playoffs, because Fylde seem to be in the pole position for the title there. But, you know, try and just give everything in there in the final games and in the playoffs, if that's the way they're going to have to go. You know, it's a tough old division to get out of. You look at the teams in there now, well, so many have been going this year. It's going to be trying again, almost going back to Notts County and talking about that victim mentality. I guess it's going to be the same for King's Lynn, just trying to get it out of their minds and do all they can to win the next set of fixtures.
Yeah, and also out of the revolving door, after I mentioned him on last week's show as well, another old friend of the show, Mr. Dave Anderton, he's retired again, I am told, for the last time. He leads Chertsey Town with them still in the playoff hunt in the Isthmian Southern Central Division. And I say Dave says he's retiring for the last time, but, I mean, you never say never in football management, do you? And just... Yeah, Brett Munyard proved that this week. Less than 6 weeks after stepping down at Brighton & Sea Regent, he's back again as first team manager.
Yeah, it's like the hokey cokey at the moment. But he's looking at the Premier League. Martin O'Neill's talking about going back in. Talking about Martin O'Neill going into Leicester, isn't there, for a sort of bit of firefight at the end of the season. So, yeah, you never say never. Retirement, so I've sort of learned in non-league football and then non-league management don't always last. but Dave's he's probably earned a few retirements, to be honest with you, with what he's achieved and what he's done in the game.
I mean, there's plenty of other news going on as well. Particularly when we're talking about changing your mind. Yeah, Scunthorpe United had announced a plan to move their training base to Ilkeston, some 70 miles away, earlier this week. Obviously, new chairman previously at Ilkeston Town, so that sort of made sense. That plan, however, appears to have been changed due to feedback, I think it was announced as. I can see the appeal of that change, because clubs have to look to save costs wherever they can, and it did work well for Barrow in their promotion back to the Football League.
Yeah, Barrow did it, and they were training in sort of Manchester way, and it could depend, you know, also like the players as well, the player pool and how you're looking at that.
Well, we spoke to Jamie Coyle at Ramsgate earlier on in the show, and one thing that he made sure of when he took charge there, that they're training at Gillingham so they can get that bigger pool of players as well. I suppose it takes an extra burden off of those players when they're having to juggle everything, and football is their life, but you have to look at player welfare again.
Yeah, I know Kings Lynn, going back to that, they've not trained in, they've trained just outside Cambridge this year, because again, it can help in recruitment and that side of thing. You know, Hereford under Josh Gowling, they sort of trained in the Midlands a little bit more, because, you know, if you're in that division, if you're in National League North, it can sort of help the players you kind of get in. But again, I get it from the other side of fans, you know, a club like Scunthorpe as well, probably, you know, when their sort of team is, they're so used to having their team close and it being part of that, you know, then you're sort of around everything in the community and you've got that sort of side of it as well. So I can understand why the fans weren't, you know, reacted the way they did. And obviously the club seemed to have listened to the fans about it. I know sort of sounds slightly bizarre, but I know some clubs have to train different places because of the availability of pitches and things and how hard it is. Yeah, particularly sort of part-time, trying to get pitches on Tuesdays and Thursday nights and facilities to train in. Sometimes you're sort of forced around and about different, all sorts of different places. But different clubs will make different things work for them, and it depends, you know, again, how they're recruiting, where they're recruiting from, and what they need for the division they're in.
Yeah. And as I say, there's plenty of other news elsewhere. There's still turmoil at York City. Announced earlier this week that an attempt by the York City Supporters Trust to buy the 51% shareholding currently held by Glenn Henderson, the chairman, who I believe still doesn't attend games for fear of his own safety, which is a concern. Their attempt to buy his share has failed. Another deadline, which has since passed, was set by Henderson for the trust to buy the club back. And he has said, though, that he fully intends to continue to financially support the football club if buyers can't be found. However, also believe that for the second time this season, the Supporters Trust have picked up the bill to pay the staff wages for another month. Every football club could be its own soap opera, really, couldn't it?
Yeah, I think not an insignificant amount of money that the trust say that they've had to dig deep for. Really feel for like York fans. You know, they're sort of saw their club get into the Football League a few years ago, back into the Football League, and you know, would thought they would have been off and running. Obviously, then fell back into non-league, then fell into National League North, finally get out last season. under John Askey and kind of all the euphoria take over in the summer, and kind of all feels like good, and then it's all fallen pretty sour quite quickly, and sort of a situation that hopefully can get resolved as soon as possible. Doesn't sound very straightforward at all. I think probably from the sort of the only sort of, you know, one of the good things that they've had, they obviously got a good win in on Monday night against Barnet, which just eased them away from the relegation zone, and that would be one of the big things, is just trying to stay in the division, which you kind of back them to do now probably, and then hopefully they can get everything sorted and sort of come back to being get that sort of stability again. And you know, there's a lot of good people up there. You sort of really feel for them, you know, people who can't control that sort of situation at the club, and also the fans. It must be so frustrating, and after feeling that they'd sort of turned the corner again.
Yeah, and it's never smooth in non-league waters, and I think sometimes we hear more about the clubs in the National League simply because of their size, the followings, and sometimes the honesty of the clubs as well. Boreham Wood this week caused a bit of a stir. Again, many complaints about the food fare at their ground this season after new caterers came in, and it was all too much for the club, who've dismissed those caterers this week with the season still not concluded. That used to be the debates that we used to have, wasn't it, about who had the best food at non-league football grounds, and now we seem to be talking about who's got the best Hollywood stars.
It's like the not just the managerial merry-go-round, it's the caterer's merry-go-round as well. I think food in sort of I think it's always been different in that's the side of it you've always enjoyed, that sort of kind of proper food, and it's not that kind of boy in the bag stuff that you seem to get at football league grounds. And you know, it's like proper cooked on a burger might be frozen, come out of a freezer, but at least it's cooked properly on a hot plate rather than sort of warmed up in some sort of weird oven thing. And you know, seeing how much clubs sort of put into their food and their catering, you know, the last few years, and how many different things you can get on these grounds now. It's not just sort of burgers and chips, as you can get all sorts. And you can follow that Twitter account, Footy Scram, that sort of puts all sorts of different things up with chicken katsu fries and all these sort of wonderful things.
I'm trying to think of the name. There's a Facebook group that I'm part of, and it's all about football food. And actually, non-league food always gets a lot more positive comments than anything higher up the pyramid.
Yeah, what's that? That's that famous burger. What's it called? The Fleet Burger at Thurrock.
What?
That's sort of those famous sort of like.
What a link.
I remember a couple of my mates had once and sort of didn't finish because it was absolutely huge.
And it sort of had. I remember didn't have like almost like a whole raw onion in it as well to just sort of give it that extra crunch.
Yeah,
of it was like you needed
too much for me.
Three hands to hold it. It was like a plate. Interesting, as I say, what a link, because as we go to bed with this podcast, we're still waiting to hear the decision from Thurrock Council on the resubmitted plans to resurrect Ship Lane, the former home of Thurrock FC. Not sure about the burgers as well, because Grays Athletic are hoping that will become their new home ground going forward. It's quite a complicated planning application. I think it's been turned down once before, but it would be great to see Ship Lane. Yeah, it's still there as a football ground. It'd be great to be able to see some football back there again.
Yeah, and for Grays to kind of have that home of their own again, sort of any trips to Grays years ago and to their old ground, and sort of, you know, see teams throughout non-league when they kind of have these long spells out of, you know, maybe different ground shares or whatever it might be, and sort of not having that sort of base and that place to call their own. And you know, Thurrock's demise was sad as well, you know, that the club couldn't continue. So hopefully from a Grays point of view that they can get the answer they're looking for and the go ahead that they're looking for, and that can sort of be a big boost for them, a big thing for them to sort of build off from again. You know, you look at clubs when they do get that sort of great, you know, mainstay, always they've got sort of the classic ones that sort of stand out, you know, for years, sort of like nomadic, sort of different grounds and chairs, different places, and I think right from when Jay Saunders took over, he's sort of in crowds of a few hundred kind of thing, and then you get back into Maidstone and thousands of people, and sort of in the, right in the centre of the town, and it just sort of, you know, can really really kick a club on. So hopefully Grays can kind of get that sort of permanent base for them, for, you know, for themselves, and that can be a start for something new for them. But I'm sure they're very nervous, as you know, as we say, we don't know what the outcome of it will be at the moment, and these sort of planning and decisions are very complex and well above a lot of my understanding of how all these things work. So hopefully, from a Grays point of view, they get the result they're looking for.
Yeah, and I, Ship Lane is one of my my favourite of my own non-league stories, where I got the train out of work from Central London out to Thurrock or whatever the nearest train station was, and walked the mile and a half to the ground in thick fog, and we still played the game. We couldn't see any of the game, but we played the game, and then I managed to get a lift back to the station at the end. But it was one of those, you know, sort of. I'm sure it would make a great theatre play one day. You know, telling the story.
Where was that game the a few years ago down? Is it down the south west somewhere? Where I think remember marine super fan Barry Lenton. I remember him telling about it. There's a game and sort of the fog came in and it got abandoned, but the assistant referee didn't realise. He just sort of stood out there sort of about 5 minutes afterwards, just in the fog. Everyone had gone in. Right. That'll be the next thing that'll happen. Then we'll have a bit more fog, and there'll be more games called off this weekend, well, and every picture pilot will go.
I did have fog driving up the other day, so you know, it does exist in these cold mornings. Without there's no cloud cover, is there? It's not a nice blue skies, but that means no cloud cover. Anyway, look, before I let you go, two things to promote. Firstly, National Game Awards coming up, and people can get involved in voting in various categories. Can you tell us more?
Yes, I can. The National Game Awards are voting is open. All your favourite categories, as we've had over the years, Player of the Year, Manager of the Year, Step 3-4 Player of the Year, Young Player of the Year, Community Club, Fan of the Year, Unsung Hero, Goalkeeper of the Year, Team of the Year, Cup Run of the Year. There's a couple I've missed, but that sort of covers quite a lot of them. But it is very much about the fans, about people having their say, not moaning when the results come out because they haven't voted. You know, this is the time now to get in. Who do you think should be winning these various awards? They're in the paper and online on our website. You know, have your say now. Get in and vote your player or your person or whoever, whatever category it is. You know, there's Wade Day Experience of the Year that runs through the year, FSA. You know, lots of there's so many rewarding, you know, that's the hardest thing about it, is there's so many people who deserve the recognition come the end of the season. So it's about listening to the fans and them having their say and getting that in, and looking forward to another fantastic event in the middle of May. Once again, we're going to AFC Wimbledon. Even before, we know about their non-league pass and you know, non-league routes and what non-league means to them. So it's a fantastic location for us, and looking forward to another great day honouring so many people from across the game. And even with a few weeks to go, there's probably a lot of awards that are up in the air depending on what happens over the next few weeks. So but yeah, voting's open, all the details in Sunday's paper and online as well.
Yeah, it seems many weeks away. I guess for you as well, because I believe that the training's been hard but constructive in preparation for a little walk or a little run you're doing.
Oh yeah, well yeah, walk, run, crawl, depends how you look at it. But yes, I'm taking on the London Marathon in 2 weeks Sunday. Stressfully close is the only way I can describe it. I'm running the London Marathon for the Essex and Hearts Air Ambulance, a charity that's very close to my heart, and something I didn't even really know until July 2016. My dad had a cardiac arrest on the M25 while in traffic, luckily, and a sort of a crazy sequence of events unfolded that means he's still here today. Some people listening will maybe know my dad. He used to be Isthmian League Secretary, he's Eastern Counties League Secretary for many years as well. He's been he's involved with the Suffolk FA as well, and kind of the person to blame for my love of non-league football. I had no choice going off to all these weird and wonderful places when I was much younger. But in July 2016, he was on the M25 on a very hot day, and had a cardiac arrest while driving, and my mum pulled the handbrake of the car to stop them sort of crashing into a wall. And then two people who could have very easily just carried on driving noticed, as they sort of crawled around him, that he was in a bad way in his front seat, and got out and commenced CPR and flagged down other people to help. And Essex and Hearts Air Ambulance were called by the paramedics. They shut down the M25, landed on it. Something that my dad's quite proud of, that he managed to shut down the whole M25 and ruin a lot of people's Sunday in July, going off to all sorts of family barbecues and things, I'm sure, and sort of shut the M25 down for a couple of hours. But he was, he's, you know, I didn't ever know that sort of air ambulances, they're not sort of centrally funded. They don't get government funding. You know, that's all, everything that they, you know, that operation is done by donations and people, you know, given to them. It's not kind of like part of the NHS. Like, the ambulance would turn up, it's completely different. And each mission costs around £2,200. So that's what I'm trying to raise, £2,200 to pay back our taxi fare, I suppose, to get my dad to Harefield Hospital, where he spent 6 weeks, and is very fortunate to be here and as well as he is now. So I know a lot of other people aren't as lucky, so we're very grateful that that he's still with us, basically, and it's sort of my turn to pay a little bit back. And running the London Marathon seemed as good a challenge as any. I've done it before, but a few years ago, and through this, just to sort of lay it on, I've had an Achilles injury, I've had COVID, and I've had hand, foot and mouth that caught off my little boy. So I've sort of gone through it in the training, but I'm finally there. I've got my 20 miles in last Sunday. I'm tapering down now for the big day, and I'm looking forward to it being over, to be honest.
And Netflix aren't following you for the documentary?
Oh, God, they need a lot of film roll. I think it's easy for these elite athletes to go out and run in 2 hours or whatever, or 2:05 or whatever they do. That's, you know, it's easy. Can't try and stay out on the roads for over 4 hours like most of us. It's going to be good fun, hopefully, parts of it.
It's a very, very worthy cause. How can people help sponsor and help you reach that target then, Matt?
You can go to, I've just got a Just Giving page, Badders Runs London, and also on my Twitter at Matt Badcock _NLP. I've got my link on there, and anybody who does, I went down to the airbase the other week, and it's the other runners, they've got some equally amazing and heartbreaking stories of sort of about 10 or 11 of us running. There's some incredible people doing it for the charity, again, incredible stories and reasons why they're getting out there for it. And we went and saw the airbase, and you can just see what it's going to such a good cause, and what it does, and how they sort of get these doctors and paramedics are on these aircraft and these helicopters, and they get out there and they bring, you know, basically a hospital theatre to an incident where the paramedics, you know, need that intervention and help so many people. It's incredible.
It is incredible, and commitment to the cause is incredible as well. We wish you all the best with that, and hopefully people will be able to support you along the route as well, drive you home. Before that, though, you've got a non-league paper to do this weekend. Anything else that we might not have covered that we can expect to read in this weekend's paper?
I feel we've covered a lot of it off, but yeah, that's caught up with Burke Hampstead. Obviously won the title, Southern League Division 1 Central last week. They sort of had a couple of cracks at it, and they got over the line last week, so we caught up with the manager, Chris Devane, there. And we've got Keith Emerson, who's retiring. He's 40. Decided it's time to hang up the boots. He's played over 1,000 games in non-league football for various different clubs, and he decided it's time to spend a bit more quality weekends with the family. And we've caught up with him, and obviously a big previews ahead of the huge game on Easter Monday between Wrexham and Notts County. Interviews in there, the managers, and Adam Virgo column looking ahead at it as well. So lots going on, and also seeing can Ebbsfleet. I think they've all but won the National League South title, and a point to absolutely book it up and guarantee it up, and no goals, mad goal swings that would would prevent them from winning it. So they've got a game against Oxford City tomorrow. Can they get that single point that they need to get over the line and return to the league's top flight as well? So lots going on, all the other stuff as well with the busy weekend ahead.
And you can enjoy your non-league paper this weekend with an Easter egg as well. Yeah, Easter eggs for breakfast all around, even for the youngsters. Matt Badcock, thanks for joining us once again on the Non-League Football Show. Have a great weekend. We'll speak to you again soon.
Thanks, Tim.
That's it then for this week. Before I go, though, I must make mention and give congratulations to Sir Leicester Town Development of the Hellenic Division 1 at Step 6. Finally, last weekend, they secured their first win of the season, a 2-0 away win at Moreton Rangers. A long slog and one win does not make a season, but I'm sure a few involved felt a weight lift off of their shoulders. And that, along with myself and the rest of Non-League, we salute you for your continued commitment and dedication in adversity, without which none of this Non-League stuff would, of course, be possible. On that note, do feel the urge to get involved with your local football club, please. Just approach your local club, and I'm sure there's something that you can help with there. If not, then check out pitchinginvolunteers.co.uk. The website there has a whole host of volunteer roles that need filling across steps 3 and step 4 of the pyramid. Those Trident League leagues there are all looking for volunteers at various clubs up and down the land. Or if you fancy getting involved in a league, I know the Combined Counties League, already mentioned this week, are very keen to get new recruits onto their board and into various voluntary positions to help the divisions they run at steps 5 and 6 and try and get those running as smoothly as possible next season and the seasons beyond. Just have a look at the Combined Counties website. I'm sure you'll find the relevant information there. So thank you to all of my guests again this week and for everybody for listening. Don't forget you can follow us throughout the season and join in throughout the week on social media at Non-League Show. Myself there at Tim Fuel, F-U-E-L-L. And as ever, you can find us every week on Audio Boom, Apple Podcasts, also Google Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, Deezer, TuneIn Radio, CastBox, iHeart, Geo7, Listen Notes, Overcast, Podcast Addict, Podchaser, Radio Republic via your smart speakers and all good podcast aggregation sites. So stay safe, enjoy your football. Thank you and goodbye.
A Jibber Jabber production. JIBBA JABBA.